Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Kerry Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, it's Kerry and I am with my good friend, Mike Kanings. Mike, how are you doing today?
Great. Really excited to be here. Excited about the topic. And we were chatting a little bit before the cameras rolled and we got some good stuff cooking.
Yeah, we do. So you're one of these guys who is always, in my opinion, on the cutting edge. And how do you think blockchain is becoming more mainstream? Because years ago, it might have been like, ooh, who are those weird people? But blockchain, crypto, NFTs, smart contracts, why do you think it's hit mainstream?
Well, statistically, it's still a long way off. When That's you look true. At the 8 billion people and 180 million or so, they say, are involved in crypto. And it is not without its problems. You know, I've been reading some of the naysayers. So I'm going to answer your question, but I want to tell you what the negatives are, which are, I can remember it was in the 90s where I had a digital marketing agency called Digital Cafe. And things had evolved enough where we went from floppy disks to like removable hard disk drives. There was one called the SciQuest that hold 44 megabytes, okay, which was huge. And they were very flawed. They got dust in them all the time and they broke. And then like I'd have a whole font library on them and it'd crash. And I'd be like, oh my God, the work I had to do to get it back. Downloading on a modem, you know, it was before there was high bandwidth.
Sure.
And we reached a point where we're developing multimedia applications, digital movies. We did interactive movie projects and stuff like that. And we had CD-ROMs, which hold 650 megabytes approximately, which back then was unbelievable because we could literally make an interactive click movie. And then the web came along and it went to modems and postage stamp style graphics. And back then HTML was, and frankly still is, crap compared to writing real code. And like we were writing code, we were writing video games, and suddenly we have to put stuff on the web and everyone's excited. Like 20th Century Fox and Sony says, use the, you know, we got to do websites. And I'm like, why? They suck. You know, it's horrible. So blockchain right now, on a positive side, what NFTs and blockchain represent, our creators are going to get paid in ways we can't even imagine right now. And the example that comes to mind that's relevant to me right now for reasons I'll explain shortly are, imagine you're a architect.
Okay.
And let's say that your fees to design a really beautiful, complicated work of art house would be $250,000. And someone would come to you and say, hey, Mr. Architect, look, we're glad to give you your $250,000. But if you'd like to put a little skin in the game, I'd like to pay you $25 million. Let me tell you how that's going to work. We'll give you $100,000 now. You're going to license your plans through that. And then we're going to give you 0.5% of the sales price of your $10 million homes your plans are going to be used for. We're going to create a whole bunch of them. You'll get 0.5%, not just once, but every time that home ever sells. And based upon these comps, we think it's going to turn around three times in the next 10 years. And what'd be great is the architect could say, okay, the smart contract set up. So there's no escrow. There's no all the traditional paperwork that goes on blows. Yeah. And you could set it up so half of your fees after $10 million, for example, would start going to a let's say a nonprofit of your choice.
Wow.
And then 25% would go to your kids broken down and divided into their trusts, which would also be crypto trusts, which would eliminate fees and attorneys and sign-offs and having to have a what do they call the person who checks to make sure your signatures are in.
I know what you're talking about.
It'll pop into our heads in a second.
Yes. Notary.
Notary pop. You know, it's like all this crap. Like we just refied our house and it took us an hour and they came in, I kid you not, with a stack this high of papers.
Right.
Some cases in duplicate and triplicate. But it's like, and this is for, and this is for, and yeah, it all has a purpose, but it's just like a bunch of attorneys covering their butts who made a whole bunch of money, creating a whole bunch of noise because we can't trust. We don't trust because people screw you, people steal. And now there's all these systems in place. And it's like, well, in the world of blockchain, in the world of trust, covenants, and contracts and smart contracts, it's not only unnecessary, it doesn't exist there anymore.
Wow.
Now, unfortunately, there is a utopian world we live in right now where most of the blockchain activities that are going on, it's just pyramid schemes. And there's a lot of shenanigans happening and a lot of dum-dums are going to lose money. A lot of people get in the game who don't understand what's going on and understand it's a shell game Ponzi scheme in a lot of ways. So overall, I think crypto blockchain is inevitable. The fact is right now we're in the world of the late 1990s, when you could write great code and things were really tight. And suddenly we're like writing on rocks again, because the way blockchain works, it's super inefficient. It's super primitive. And there's a lot of unregulated stuff going on where there's theft and shenanigans going on at the same time. But the philosophy, what it represents, is great. Man, I talked too long there, but I'm excited.
No, that was awesome. To your point, oh my gosh, I've never heard that illustration of the plans. I mean, that's so positive that this architect doesn't need to throw away their work of art and make that much. Instead, they make that much, but then the upside. Oh my gosh, I've never heard that. I was just on Instagram and someone pretending to be an influencer even puts the pictures up, you know, basically said, hey, here's my blockchain address, or here's my wallet, send this amount of money, and immediately flags go up. A little bit of diving deeper. He's not who he says he is. But imagine a day, Mike, where because we do so much online with trust, I can press a button. It says that that person is completely who they are. It says that they went to that school. It says that their transcripts are that. It says that their GPA is that. It says that they know who someone is that I know. I mean, we literally can flatten the world. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the all of that, and let's just take things another step of like a practical implementable thing. So I despise Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. I think they're time-wasting evils in general that have had a largely negative effect on society. Having said that, I don't say they're not useful.
Sure. Okay?
I love the fact that I can push a button and broadcast to the entire connected planet. I just think that bad people do bad things and they don't disclose it. We have a trust issue again. And if you think about what real life is, so this is something I can't remember who said it. Oh, it was Dave Chappelle when he did his last big comedy special. And he got in a lot of trouble with the Alphabet Soup Society, meaning all the letters behind their names, which are a new form of psychic terrorism. You know, it's when the oppressed becomes the oppressors. Now, again, I'm not saying always, just saying we live in dangerous times of cancel culture where there are mobs of individuals who can manipulate the system to get their way, and then they become the oppressors. It's just a cycle. And the only real thing we have in our world, in the real world, not the Twitter world, is a reputation.
Interesting.
And what I would suggest we have is a true reputation online. Right now it's fake and you can do anything, you can be anything. But I mean, the real reputation. And it's like, oh yeah, well, if we get canceled, it's sort of like we can actually tell if people are telling the truth. I mean, we're getting to the point now where, you know, let's say you could just look and go, well, you're happen to like a certain former president who doesn't have a track record of telling the truth or doing good things. Okay. I'll just say as an example, and I'm not making a political statement. It's sort of like, look at the character, right? But I could just simply say, and this is almost sounding like the what was the Black Widow? It's like a sci-fi movie series, Black Widow or something. Black Mirror. Black Mirror is what it is. And the whole idea in there, there's this episode where you have augmented reality vision, and you could just turn someone off, and suddenly you can't hear them and you can't see them. They're literally disappear. But in the world of digital, if you'd say, look, someone who lies 50% of the time, anyone who lies 50% of the time, I will make it impossible for them to connect, communicate with me, and none of the information they create will actually ever show up in my view.
Wow.
And that can all be managed on the blockchain. Pardon me?
So like you made them disappear. I mean,
And in the metaverse, that's entirely possible if you're wearing VR and AR goggles and that kind of thing. And again, for every positive, I think it's going to be incredible for education. I think it's going to be incredible for, you know, being able to do business, a new level of communication and intimacy. I think in some cases, it's sort of like, is plastic surgery bad? No, I've seen it change lives. If you can get a couple extra miles out of your face, and it changes the way you see yourself and the way you feel, and it gives you more energy, I'm all for it. Okay. I think the Kardashianism of the planet is bad. It's like a bunch of fake lips, fake butts, and fake boobs isn't beneficial to society.
Okay.
And in the world of AR and VR, what we're about to see, if you think addiction's a problem now, wait till you've got porn addiction in VR, when you've got attachments to your bodies that wrinkle and pinch and squeeze, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to have big problems. And bigger ones, as well as being able to stimulate the brain without chemicals, but get the same effects.
Wow. Okay?
There are downsides, and the transactions will take place completely digitally, right? With a crypto, with a token that has its own value. You know, we're operating where energy shift and movement is radical. So again, I believe ultimately it will be beneficial and good for society. I just think we've got to walk in with our eyes open and have a dialogue and a conversation. We've got to put education in our children first. And that didn't happen.
Listen, you went deep fast, man. So let me ask you this. Does technology outstrip our morality?
I don't think anything is ever black and white. So okay. I'd present it like this. Is the world safer and better because of technology? There's no question, statistically speaking, we are. Is the quality of life better on this planet overall? There's tons of data flat out proving that's the case. And, you know, I was just joking with my wife. We're making a little bit of in the kitchen together, literally before I came on here. And we had a gift that came in the mail. Yeah. And it was wrapped with some thin film, single-use Chinese plastic, you know, really crinkly, crunchy stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that's choking the planet right now, destroying our oceans, destroying our soil. And do we really need it? No. Is it unbelievably wasteful? Yes. And I only have so much bandwidth each day to dedicate to feeling bad. Okay.
There you go.
I can only control what I can control and how I feel. And the overall, our capability and ability to produce more food, have a higher quality of life, overall more democracy, I think is better. Do we lack from good journalism now? I you know, we've seen very little good journalism in quite a few years. The internet and hype and cancel culture and click to like and voting by likes by people who frankly shouldn't be given a vote because they haven't earned it. I say that again, I'm not trying to be an elitist. It's sort of like, I don't think stupid people should be able to move the moral fiber of a society. I think an education is necessary and important. And if you decide to consume Kardashianism, I don't think you should have a right to vote. You know, it's like putting on a stupid filter. You don't let a drunken three-year-old drive a car on a freeway. And that's what we have right now. We do have an abundance of that. Now, if you're comparing to several thousand years ago capability, you know what? It's probably better.
Yeah.
Who am I? Don't listen to me, you know?
I didn't think this would be a comedy show too, but I get both. I get content and comedy. So your point is that technology will bring a big advantage. However, it will also give fuel to the people who are already jacked up, and they'll be more jacked up.
Yeah, I think, well, here's, I have a philosophy that there's a certain percentage, I don't know exactly what it is. I think there are certain brain types that, I think this is just an observable fact.
Okay.
Not a philosophy. I think some people are born addicts. Their brain chemistry suggests that they have a tendency towards that. Now, is it a chemical imbalance? Maybe. But I've known people who exhibited bipolar disorder, and under the scans and the maps, it's sort of like, yep, we can look at it. You know, there's a question as to whether sexuality is, you know, if you're born a certain way, have a tendency. I think science suggests that, yes, okay, it's more often than, let's say, environmental or social conditioning. And so I think, you know, humans are really, really complex. And to boil one thing down and say, this is good, this is bad, lacks the nuance of what the universe provides us, which is nuance.
Interesting.
And there's subtlety. And without subtlety and nuance and a conversation, there is no art. And I think that life does have a tendency to imitate art. I think pop culture is an example of that. I think any kind of trends, and if you look at something like the Beatles documentary that came out, that was an extraordinary masterpiece by Peter Jackson. And what you got to witness over a period of 9 hours, three-hour segments, was what collaborative creation really looks like amongst some geniuses who love each other. And they've been together since they're 15 years old. They're about 30 here. It's their last real album together. And you can just tell they're tired and weary. And so everything goes through cycles. And I think we've reached a certain point of our technology platforms, the way we govern, and our capacity to reason and understand has grown considerably. All these things. There is a much needed change. And we get back to the whole concept of blockchain, governance, money, the perception of value. What this enables us to do is innovate really, really quickly.
Mm.
And there's a couple podcasts I've listened to. One of them is called All In.
Okay.
Bunch of big Silicon Valley geniuses. They get together and they simply are saying, we are on the brink right now of what will become the largest renaissance in creators and creativism in human history.
Wow.
Not by a little bit, but by magnitudes, because creators can get paid for who they are, and not just once, but many, many times. And creation is a very complicated big idea, right? Mm.
I love it. I love it. So you're basically saying that the technology is allowing humanity to express something that they've always had, creativity, but it was maybe reserved for the elite, but the technology allows us to really all step up to the plate.
Yes. I'm going to give you a yes and.
Okay.
Right. With a real practical example again of, let's just pretend that, you're a great creator, but you're not a great executor. And I'll put it in the context of Star Wars as an example. It could be a Harry Potter. It could be anything. But let's just pretend that you created the next big thing. And again, I'll use Star Wars as an example because I heard this on a... And what you do is you'd say, hey, you get to be part of this franchise. Here's how it works. you can create a democratically built series of shows. So it's kind of like creating fan fiction, a fan program. And in it, you're going to have editors and shooters and animators and writers.
Okay.
And we will license you our characters. But of everything you make, know that it's derivative content. 40% of any money that gets made in distribution, et cetera, goes back to us, 60% goes back to the community. And then again, you could set up these smart contracts. So there'd be distribution systems, and it's kind of an advanced Hollywood model, but the whole idea is because it happens immediately, it doesn't require complex stuff, but suddenly you feed the fans this content and they just go to work and create a whole new universe, but everyone gets to participate because it's democratic. Maybe there's some tools in it that decides what gets used, what doesn't. That's pretty interesting, right? And again, for a creator, typically, if you created a piece of art, you get paid once, goes back. If you're lucky, you might find an individual who would be your patron and pay you a big lump sum and say, hey, I just want to hang out with you. It's basically a rich guy with no talent says, I want to hang out with an artist, right? And be like, come on over, Mick Jagger. I'm rich.
It's okay. The entourage, right? I want to be part of you.
Very much. And so I think, again, that when you imagine that over the past 2 years during the C word, P word, we had that's very carefully masked so the gods of the internet don't flag this content. you know, we've been able to operate and work virtually. And, you know, I think it's magnificent. I think it's awesome. We just, my wife and I just bought 3.5 acres in Mexico in Todos Santos. We're building homes down there, building a studio. We bought a strawberry field. Okay. So I'm calling it Strawberry Field Studios.
Okay? Oh,
what do you think of that?
That's pretty slick.
And, but I'm going to do everything using blockchain. I'm not going to do anything using money any longer. It's only going to be, I'm going to only accept payment. That's the way I'm doing business. I'm committed to it. And our goal is to build out systems that enable creators of any sort, whether it's business or art or content, to operate within this world. So I'm all in. I'm completely committed to it. And by the way, we're growing our own food and we're going to create a sustainable space and put casitas on the property so farmers can live next to us. I mean, we're making a conscious effort to live in a responsible way, and instead of talk about it, we're going to do it.
Wow. Talk a little bit about Mike and your wife, because I've seen your Instagram. I saw you in Mexico recently, but you've written Cancerpreneur. Your wife's part of a foundation. Give us the quick backstory, because blockchain essentially is being dropped upon the canings, and all these expressions are now optimized, 10x'd, as Dan Sullivan, our friend, says. Talk to us about who is Mike, and tell me your wife's name. Is it Vivian?
Yeah, it's Vivian Glick. She actually still has her maiden last name. We married older in life, and we went to the courthouse. She looked around and she's like, to become you is going to be like so much work. Does it mean you don't love me? And I go, I don't care. As long as we get to name our kid a Koenigs, I'm fine.
But
anyway, that was our bargain. But so you're just kind of looking for a little background around who we are, in case someone's never heard of it.
The fact that you care about the planet, the fact that you care about overcoming cancer, you have this powerful story that you were given a death sentence and you clawed back to purpose. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think her backstory, we both have, you know, I believe everyone has an interesting story and an interesting background. She's the daughter of Holocaust survivors. Her mother's still alive, lives by herself. She's 89 years old and in Queens, New York. She grew up in Spanish Harlem and was very, very smart. Was fortunate enough, even though they're very poor, that her mother got her into some good schools. She went to some higher end prep schools in Manhattan, and then started college when she's 16 years old. So she graduated when she's 19, and after doing work in the healthcare space, healthcare marketing specifically, she went to run Deepak Chopra's marketing and events. So that got her connected with the whole personal development, personal growth, what I guess was called New Age philosophy at the time. And it was because of that we met. I kind of met her through a combination of because of some connections with Tony Robbins, my interest in Neil Donald Walsh and Deepak and Wayne Dyer. I had gone to Egypt with Wayne and Deepak the year before we met in Greece.
Wow.
So we got married, had a kid, ended up moving to San Diego. She opened up her network to me, and pretty soon I know all these same personal development gurus and worked with Tony and Wayne Dyer and Deepak and then really did more with marketing. Some of the old guys like Dan Kennedy and Brian Tracy and
Jay Abram and all those people. Yeah.
Jay. Yeah. Doing a project with Jay right now, in fact.
Wow.
So, and if you fast forward a little bit, started, you know, a couple companies, two software companies, and then I had cancer. I was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. And part of the healing journey involved, first of all, I wrote my first book, and then that turned into a product where we taught people how to write books and publish and do kind of a mini version of what you're doing, more of a, a mass market version, right?
Yeah.
And then my last book I wrote is right here. It's called Cancerpreneur.
Wow.
And it's really the system I developed to survive. And it's really, if I were going to subtitle it, so the subtitle is How You, Your Marriage, Family, and Business Can Survive and Thrive a Cancer Diagnosis and Treatment. So number one, I had I couldn't find any support for entrepreneurs and business owners who had cancer. There's literally nothing existed.
Wow.
And I was like, how do you run a business and maintain it and keep your family going? And it was just an insurmountable challenge.
Man, that is a critical book.
Yeah. And I know it saved lives. You know, it's like if a book saves one life, then it's worth it. But the next side was, the way you do it is by hacking the healthcare system. So I figured out how to apply my persuasion, influence, and direct response capabilities to keep my doctors super interested and give me 5 or 10 times more attention than the average patient. So, you know, the best way to be interesting is to be interested. And it wasn't an act of manipulation. It was simply an act of
survival.
How do you create massive curiosity in the people who are taking care of you, and they reward your curiosity with intention and your compliance as well. So I became a very, very compliant patient. I did everything they said and a whole lot more. And I always showed up. You know what? All the doctors always laughed amongst themselves. They said, you're the only cancer patient